Welcome back to this special edition of Fear or Favour, where we're going to talk about Prince Andrew and the Maxwell court outcome. It's not our planned technology one. You'll get that next week. So let's just set a little bit of the background in terms of where we're talking. Maxwell has been found guilty. She is going to be serving a very lengthy custodial sentence. But there's also been a major development this week, and that is in relation to Prince Andrew. We've got this lady called Guffrey, also known as Virginia Roberts. Now, she sued Andrew in New York in 2021, claiming that she was a victim of sexual assault and battery. She says that Andrew forced her to have sexual intercourse on three separate occasions when she was 17 years old at the home of Maxwell and properties owned by Epstein. Andrew's lawyers have called this lawsuit absolutely baseless and accused her of seeking a payday. There has been a development this week, and that is in relation to a settlement in 2009 for £500,000 with Guffrey and Epstein. And that settlement has been heard by the court in the recent days for the judge to make his decision in whether or not that prevents Prince Andrew being brought to a trial in relation to the claims by Guffrey. Now, let's take these in part, because there's an awful lot to talk about. And I know our podcast in relation to Maxwell and Andrew has received huge amounts of hits. Maxwell, guilty. Feedback from that?
Yeah, it's a big deal. If you recall, there were people asking questions about the prosecution strategy. They were wondering about whether or not she would give evidence. She didn't. They were wondering about how long the trial would last. It lasted less than 4 weeks. It was extremely fast. Mm. And the jury asked lots of questions. People were wondering whether or not she would potentially be found not guilty. As it happens, the jury came back with one not guilty, but five guilties. And it led to a significant outpouring of concern about whether or not she's safe now. What does she know? Undoubtedly, she now faces a significant prison sentence, potentially the rest of her life. And of course, while she doesn't get the same benefits had she reached an agreement with the prosecutors in advance of the trial, she potentially could mitigate her sentence by saying, right, I will now tell you everything. So there's a lot of discourse about whether or not she will now, she has more incentive now to spill the beans than previously. But of course, she can appeal. And that's the other thing that people need to be
mindful. What I thought was quite interesting, and we talked about this on an earlier podcast when we talked about Maxwell and Epstein, was the angle that the media were taking during the course of the trial. And if I didn't obviously analyse an awful lot of the media, but the ones that I did do certainly was putting a slant on that the prosecution's case was weak and that they were not presenting the right victims in relation to this case. Guffrey, for example, she wasn't used. But the evidence was obviously incredibly compelling.
Yeah, well, we spoke about this before, that people don't, and I think people don't understand the process of grooming. They don't understand that victims of non-recent sexual abuse don't disclose in the way that any other crime. If you were burgled, you would say, they came to my house, they burgled me. You'd have the date, time, everything else. Victims of non-recent abuse tend to jump all over the place because of the trauma they've suffered. And so people were saying, well, that's inconsistent. But actually, inconsistency is strangely a sign of credibility and veracity when it comes to sexual abuse when it's non-recent in this nature. So we said before that I think people were putting too much emphasis on the fact that the victims weren't telling the story in a chronological fashion and clearly and stuck to their original accounts. But as we know from our own experiences, that happens more frequently than not.
And of course, in relation to sexual abuse, it is very rare that there are witnesses. So it is the offender and the victim and nobody else.
Well, one person's word against another, or in this case, several people's word against her. And, the jury did their job. They spent several days exploring whether or not these inconsistencies amounted to anything, whether or not one person's account corroborated another person's account. And the fact that they found her not guilty of one of the six counts on the indictment clearly shows they had gave it great thought and great consideration. And I think that must be troubling for any appeal that might that Ghislaine Maxwell might want to pursue, because the jury did their job, the judge did his job, advocates, you know, did what they could, made sure all the evidence that needed to be put before the court. And of course, Ghislaine Maxwell exercised her right of silence. She didn't have to give evidence. She didn't give evidence. And that in American law isn't held against you. So I think that it was a pretty fair trial. I think people can't really argue about how fair it was. I think people are more interested now in the consequences in relation to others.
But I think one of the things that really struck me in relation to the evidence against Maxwell was the similarity in the manner of which the crimes were taking place. And she really was facilitating bringing these girls to Epstein to abuse.
Yeah, grooming. This is, you know, whether or not it happens on the back streets of UK towns or it happens in the international way that it happens here, it's the same process. It's the manipulation of very, very vulnerable people, giving them things like they want, things they might want, warmth, they might want transport, they might want drugs, drink, in order to trap them. And then when they're trapped, they can be abused. And then you use the fact that they're involved in low-level criminality against them. You burden them with literally with secrets so they can't talk about what's happened to them. And one of the things, that came out of this case was the way we were treating Ghislaine Maxwell different to any other sex abuser or sex trafficker.
Absolutely. And I think that really, I know it got you annoyed and it got me annoyed. And Maxwell's brother came on and gave an interview to Sky News, why they allowed him to have a platform like that. And he gave an interview basically saying, well, these girls have told the truth in relation to Epstein. We must believe them, but not in relation to Maxwell. She hasn't got. Well, it's like, hang on a minute, why are you giving this man a platform? Exactly. She was being treated very differently than you would treat. She was still being called a socialite. She was still being called by Ghislaine Maxwell. You know, she wasn't being called paedophile Maxwell.
Yeah, sex offender, convicted sex offender. And then you had the even more edifying sight or unedifying sight of Alan Dershowitz giving an interview with the BBC almost immediately after the jury had come back. Alan Dershowitz was himself implicated in this whole saga. And the idea that he was, quote unquote, a constitutional lawyer with a a neutral view on this was absolute nonsense. I mean, the BBC apologized.
Position was even worse, wasn't it? Because he not only did he have a platform in order to defend himself, he went further than that and basically tore apart the evidence of the victims, saying that they were totally liars, they'd made this all up. You know, that wasn't an independent. No. I mean, the BBC have apologised in relation to that, and editorially they've accepted that they got that wrong.
Yeah.
But the damage was already done.
Yeah, absolutely. From the moment the convictions happened, people were making excuses for her in a way that you wouldn't do about any other sex offender, certainly in this country. So
Why did that happen?
It's money. It's always money. It's establishment. Even before the trial, Mark, there were articles written about her, sympathizing about in terms of her background and the tragic life that she had and all the rest of it, you know, making excuses for the woman that she is rather than focusing on what she did. And I think that's the establishment coming together and protecting its own. It's no more, no less, I'm afraid.
And she didn't give evidence in court. And if the reports are to be believed, she wanted to, but her defence team said that it was best not to give evidence.
Well, you know,
it's a very difficult position, isn't it?
Because most members of the public seem to think, well, I think their view would be, look, give your account. And it means if you didn't do it, then tell us what happened. And of course, in her circumstances, and most defence lawyers will say the same thing. You are not, the defence aren't there to prove anything. It's for the prosecution to prove the case. And therefore, don't give the prosecution any ammunition that they wouldn't otherwise have. And I think their view was that with her giving evidence, potentially there was so much ammunition they could throw at her.
Do you think in hindsight now, it could have helped her? I mean, it couldn't mean any worse, could it? She's been found guilty of 5 of the 6 and she's going to jail for a very long time.
Yeah, well, exactly. My point is, I've said before about her, she is a very charming woman. When I prosecuted her 25 years ago, she seemed to be able to, I don't know, go through the courtroom and everybody was almost in awe of her. And so I think that she would have been able to charm the jury to some extent. Yeah, absolutely. But at the end of the day, facts are facts. and the accounts given by the victims were so credible and so coherent. There's no other decision the jury could have reached.
Do you think that this case would ever have got to court in the UK? Do you think the Americans were bolder than us?
I always say that, I'm afraid. And people criticize me sometimes for bigging up the American system. I don't. The American system has massive flaws, given the way, for example, it incarcerates so many black people, for starters. But when it comes to people, you know, our podcast is called Without Fear or Favor. And the Americans do operate without fear or favor. You will see CEOs of very large companies, chairs, you know, very famous politicians being prosecuted and convicted. In this country, we have undue deference. We don't seem to prioritize it, despite the fact the damaging effects it has on public trust. So I think that the Americans seem to not care too much about who it is that they're prosecuting. We seem to care too much.
And in terms of the truth, or more truth coming out, I'm not sure that the full truth would ever come out, but more truth coming out, and Maxwell talking, that seems highly unlikely now, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I would. She hasn't done up to now. When the greatest benefit to her would have been to enter some kind of plea arrangement before the trial, and then she would have much more control about the ultimate sentence. Now she has, bare minimum control. Really, the judge will hand out a significant sentence, potentially the rest of her life in prison. But you know, who knows? It depends on what information she has and who else should be implicated. I think people need to. People have said frequently, and I will say the same thing, and you and I both said this, she's the trafficker. What about the people to whom she trafficked? What about their responsibility and them being brought to justice? And it doesn't matter who they are and how important they were or how important they are. They too should be brought to justice. And the victims that they, you know, all the victims need their day in court.
And there's some very powerful people, isn't there? I mean, let's not forget there's two past US presidents who were close friends of Epstein and very often were seen not only in his company, but also traveling on that plane.
That was the evidence
Clinton
in court.
And Trump.
The evidence in court was, these people were frequently traveling to the island. I mean, I can't imagine what that island must be like. But, you know, this place where they were then abusing people, women and girls. But, you know, there were loads and loads of people going, people who should know better, people in the public eye, people with enormous assets, et cetera, people with enormous power. I hope that the American authorities don't stop at Ghislaine Maxwell, and that they,
because that's the fear, isn't it? Is they pull, and the UK is very good at that. It gets to a point where it says enough is enough. We're not going to continue to investigate more. Yeah. You know, I've had that with cases where they get to a position to go, do you know what? We're just actually not going to investigate any more cases in relation to this person. They've already got 100 charges against them. We're not going to do any more.
And we do that frequently, but in this case, we're talking about people who haven't been charged at all. So yeah. I can see the logic behind saying, well, 100 is enough, but we haven't charged anybody in this country.
No.
And the Americans clearly know, the evidence clearly shows that there were other people implicated. The point is that traffickers wouldn't need to traffic if there weren't the customers, the abusers.
Yes.
And so, yes, Ghislaine Maxwell's guilty of trafficking, but the people who abuse facilitated, made that happen. So they have a responsibility. And I hope, as I say, the Americans don't stop short at where they
will. There'll be an element of the individuals in the American prosecuting system who will absolutely be going, hell and leather to go and get those offenders.
Yeah.
The problem is how powerful within the system it is to be able to bring those people who have got even greater power to justice. The chances of bringing those people in the UK is non-existent, but in the US is still very difficult.
It is. I mean, again, the government could appoint a special prosecutor, who has the powers to go everywhere the evidence takes them. The Americans could do that. We can't do that in this country. And so I remain optimistic. I think the public are still calling for the whole network to be brought down.
And that's what it needs, doesn't it? It needs continued public opinion to keep this going, to keep asking the questions of, well, there were other people. There must have been other people. This isn't something was just being done on a single scale.
Well, as we're going to discuss now, there are people of enormous power around the world, including royalty, who are implicated in this network. And, I think the public, for them to continue to have confidence in the justice system, need to see that everybody responsible is brought to justice if the evidence supports that.
There's one extra element of the Maxwell trial, which I think is quite interesting, and I'm going to pick your brains on this because I don't know the answer, is that there was a jury member who was a victim of child sexual abuse, and they obviously sat in the jury and gave evidence. Now, all the background to the jurors of what they disclose is on a questionnaire and is obviously then shared with both prosecution and defence, who can make their objection to those jury members. I don't know whether or not on those questionnaires, and you might not know in America, but would you have a question on those questionnaires which says, have you ever been the victim of sexual abuse?
I think so. In a case of this nature, yes, they would. Because it's immensely relevant to the matter before the court. But let's put this in context. In the UK, early last year, the Office for National Statistics said that 3.1 million adults in this country have been sexually abused as children. That's one in 20. So the likelihood of a jury anywhere not having a victim of sexual abuse or even child sexual abuse is actually minimal. There are so many, sadly, in this country and around the world who suffer.
And especially given we're talking about the US, and I always multiply the US by 10 in relation to our figures. So, that's a big number
it is.
Of people.
The idea that you could find a jury that hasn't been impacted by sexual abuse, I just don't think it's possible.
And of course, the thing that doesn't go in the defense favor is that they already had that information shared with them and they didn't make an objection at the time.
Exactly.
So it's incredibly difficult for them now to raise that point back up.
Yeah, again, you can't just keep it in your back pocket and wait for an appeal. You have the opportunity during the course of the trial to make the point. And they have alternate jurors in America. So one juror can leave and another person replaces them. So the system enables the replacement of people who they may be concerned about.
So let's talk about Prince Andrew. Mm. And let's talk first in relation to this judgment that was made in 2009. This is this judgment that the Andrews legal team felt was enough to get him off the hook.
We've talked about plea agreements before, and a plea, Jeffrey Epstein, when he was tried by American prosecutors Florida prosecutors back in 2009, reached an agreement with them. And as part of that agreement, he agreed in relation to Virginia Giuffre to pay $500,000. And the agreement was between him and, in effect, her. And it was also to protect potential defendants. That was the wording used in the document. And the view taken by Prince Andrew's lawyers was quite simple. They said that Prince Andrew could fall into the category of potential defendant, and therefore this plea agreement prevents Virginia Giuffre from actually taking any action against him. Now, the judge poured enormous amount of scorn on that. I mean, it was 1 hour. I urge anybody that has an hour's to listen to it. I mean, it's available on the American court website, but also there are a number of transcripts of it available to people, because the judge, it didn't need, to be frank, the prosecutor to do their job. So the Virginia Giuffre's lawyers do their job. The judge did it all for them.
Very clear and very outspoken.
Oh, absolutely. Let's think of the arguments. One of the arguments made by Prince Andrew's lawyers was that the allegations made by Virginia Giuffre were vague, too vague. She doesn't mention dates with any clarity. And the judge says, do you know of any historical sex abuse case where somebody's been able to say it was 4 p.m. on the 3rd of November? And they go, oh, okay, all right, yeah, we'll stop that one. The second one was allegations and behaviors she charged weren't clear enough. And the judge goes, I think you'll find, sexual abuse is pretty clear to everybody.
Yeah. Well, the detail is clear enough for me to understand, and for other people to understand.
Exactly. And then, of course, perhaps the most troubling for me, actually, argument made by Prince Andrew's lawyers related to why this allegation was being able to be brought in the first place. As we know, and our American colleagues will know, they have a statute of limitations.
Yeah,
and so that means there are certain crimes which you cannot bring actions against, or behaviors you can't bring actions against after a certain period of time. What the New York authorities did was they introduced something called the Child Victims Act, recently, and gave a window of 2 years to people who may have been abused in the past to bring an allegation and for that allegation to be pursued in the courts. And Virginia Giuffre took advantage of that. So before the end of that 2 year period, she brought this action. And what Prince Andrew's lawyers were saying was that that law, that bit of legislation from New York, was unconstitutional. What they were saying, in effect, was never mind Virginia Giuffre and her action. Every other person that has brought an action, every other child abuse victim, the hundreds who have brought actions under this bit of legislation, should not have been able to. So in order to protect himself, he was going to literally throw hundreds of victims under the bus. And a lot of people have been really offended by that attempt. And of course, sadly, the other thing about that, or sadly for him, is that the courts have already held that, that bit of legislation is constitutionally correct. So it was a nonsense argument.
And Virginia Giuffre has been shown to be truthful because the evidence that she gave in relation to Epstein has resulted in a settlement. He accepted that in relation to that. So it's the same argument that Maxwell's brother comes up with, which is, well, they're truthful on one element, but not on the other when it relates to somebody that I'm related to and I don't want to be found guilty. Yeah. And that's exactly the position, of course, of Prince Andrew. The other thing that I found, your argument is you've not got a very good argument if the points that you are picking up on are these points, which is essentially you can't prosecute me because it says any other defendant. If that's the strength of your argument, that you weren't responsible, you've got a problem.
Well, yeah, lawyers, we pay lawyers to find technical defences for people. I mean, that's the nature of the job. And of course, that means that it keeps the authorities on their on their toes, basically, to make sure that they do the right thing. So I'm not going to criticise them for doing so. I think it's about how it looks, Mark. Yeah. What, Prince Andrew was relying upon an agreement made by a convicted paedophile against one of his victims in order to try and get off receiving a court case or hearing a court hearing in his case. It doesn't look good. And of course, Prince Andrew, as I said, in relation to the constitutional argument, was prepared to throw hundreds of other child abuse victims under a bus in order to say that he shouldn't be brought to justice. But as I said, Judge Kaplan was really, really forthright in his responses, not only to the ones I've just mentioned, but also he seemed to identify things. This agreement says, for example, it says that the agreement signed between Epstein or agreed by Epstein cannot be used in any other court by any other person at any other time. Well, why are you trying to use it, Prince Andrew?
Yeah.
And then says, hang on, and this agreement says, this must be secret to the parties. Well, how is it possible for Prince Andrew then to use a secret agreement to which he was not a party of or responsible for? So the judge found all of this, and judge made these points. So is it no surprise that Judge Kaplan found against Prince Andrew? But it seems like, if anything, it's just made it worse.
And Andrew's defense, there's always an interesting defense when your position of a defense is, I wasn't there, compared to, yes, I was there, but it was consensual or whatever it was. Now, of course, he can't say that it was consensual because of her age, but there is a position where he could talk in terms of, well, yes, I was there, but nothing happened. Because he has told the BBC in his 2019 interview that he could not have had sex with Giuffre at Maxwell's house because he had returned to his own house after a children's party. Now, the problem with Prince Andrew is that Prince Andrew has security with him. And therefore, there will be a record of where Prince Andrew is at certain times. And he's running a very, very difficult and very delicate game.
Just on that point, though, Mark, I mean, again, as part of the civil action that Virginia Giuffre is bringing, the judge has ordered disclosure. So Prince Andrew's team will have to disclose evidence or material to Virginia Giuffre, and she will disclose.
And they haven't yet, have they?
They haven't disclosed any of this material. In fact, there may well be a suggestion that it doesn't exist anymore.
I'm sure
suggesting a shredder or a fire in somebody's back garden, but it does give the impression that that maybe that evidence doesn't exist anymore. But the broader point here is that he's allowed, any defendant in any action is allowed to bring multiple defenses. You can say, again, my point earlier on, you don't have to prove anything as a defendant.
No. But you just try and pull the prosecution's case apart.
No, exactly. He's saying, he can say, there's nothing wrong with him saying, I wasn't there. And he could say, I wasn't there. But if I was there, I didn't do anything. If I did do something, it was with consent. If it wasn't with consent, I honestly believed it was with consent. You know, so yeah. He's allowed to bring multiple defences to the party, so to speak. But unfortunately, that interview with the BBC and Emily Metcalfe in the BBC really did not do him any favours at all.
No,
because people, are now questioning. Well, began to question his veracity. Early doors. I have to say it again that he denies all allegations that have been made against him by Virginia Giuffre.
It's always very difficult, him, isn't it, when you say some of those things and you immediately look at it and go, well, that doesn't look very good because actually what you're telling me, I'm struggling to believe. For example, the man doesn't sweat. Well, I've seen shirts that he's wearing and he's sweating.
Yeah.
And you go, well, okay, that's a slight problem.
And he's been asked for medical evidence on that. And of course, there is no medical evidence on that.
No.
You know? No. You don't put stuff in the public domain that you then have to be able to prove and you can't prove it. Well, I'm afraid, better to stay silent. And of course, he was advised that to do the BBC interview because that, I think, would have cleared his name and everything would be fine. But actually, all it's done is added more fuel to the fire, I'm afraid.
And of course, that photograph now that brings a different significance, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Jeanette Maxwell's there. Virginia Giuffre's there. Prince Andrew's there. Nobody's arguing, although tenuously, I think they might have argued it was photoshopped in some way.
They did initially. But they no said longer. He wasn't there.
Yeah, no longer argued, I don't think. But he just didn't know who she was. I think that's the most recent line that he's taking.
He did very well not knowing who she was and peering in the manner that he was next to her.
Well, as I say, a jury will decide in due course the veracity of the accounts in this case. But unfortunately, the court of public opinion is as important for the royal family and particularly for Prince Andrew as the court of law. And the court of public opinion, if you look online, read social media, they don't have a very high opinion of Prince Andrew, regardless of what the outcome of this case may be in due course.
And then how will it work? So say, for example, the judge says, the judge was obviously now kicked out the settlement as being an issue. So we're going to trial. Prince Andrew says, I'm not attending. Prince Andrew says, no, I'm not coming to give evidence.
Well, yeah.
How does that work?
How does it work? It works like any other civil case. If I was to take an action against you, Mark, because you owed me X amount of money, and I go and the court hears that, and I tell the court this is what he's done, and you're not there to defend yourself, then I win.
Yeah.
There is what's called a judgment in default. So default of your appearance, the judgment favours.
So he's got a big call to make, hasn't he? Am I going to participate in this or not?
Well, he goes back to my point. He doesn't have to give evidence himself. He can still call a defence.
Yes.
He doesn't have to give evidence himself, which I suspect is the route he might take. I mean, there are a number of options open now. Virginia Giuffre may settle, or Prince Andrew may settle. I don't imagine that will happen.
Let's look at that. So obviously, the fact of taking a settlement, there'll be very clear wording to say that this settlement isn't accepting guilt. But the very nature of accepting a settlement has that as an implication, doesn't it?
Yes, of course it does. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein didn't admit it, but we all know he was convicted paedophile. And, the point is, you have to decide whether or not you want all of this aired in court or not. And it may well be that his advisors will say, we don't want this aired in court. Even if we don't have an admission of guilt on your part, and we just pay a certain sum of money and whatever it is in a certain form of words, that will at least make
this case
go away.
Can she say, no, I'm not going to take any money. I want to have this in court.
She doesn't have to accept anything that he throws at her or offers. And it may well be, as I said, it's very unlikely that there will be a settlement.
I mean, that's the way to go, isn't it? Because let's have all this information in the public domain.
Absolutely.
And I think she wants that, doesn't she?
She has steeled herself for this. It's to stand up to anybody in a position of power, it takes enormous guts. And enormous bravery, regardless of the trial process. But she clearly wants her day in court, and I can't imagine that this course will be settled by some settlement beforehand. So we're then looking at a trial in September or later this year anyway, where her evidence will be heard, and any other evidence supporting her account will be heard. And then the defense will have to take a view as to whether or not they will call evidence of any kind in order to rebut it.
And that trial is going to receive massive, massive media attention.
Well, this is the nature of you know, could you have got away with, I mean, if it had been dealt with months ago and years ago, maybe people would have forgotten all about it now. But, you know, if Prince Andrew had said, if there's any allegation to which he would want to say sorry, if he'd said sorry, and if she had accepted that, then this would have gone away. But we are now backs against the wall, all bets off.
It's full steam ahead now, isn't it? The gloves are off. It's full steam ahead.
I can't think of any
this
other.
This is where it's going.
Right? I can't think of any this other option other than a hearing later this year where we will hear even more salacious and terrible stuff, I'm afraid.
And of course, they may well say that all the documents have, you know, been unable to be found, and we can draw whatever implication we want from that. But there are people. There will be individuals, former protection officers, there'll be other people. And it's really incumbent on them now, isn't it, to stand up and speak up?
You would hope so. You would hope that people would see that they want to be on the right side of history. And being on the right side of history means telling the truth and doing so in such a way that the public can gain confidence. And I'm a very strong supporter of the royal family myself. This whole thing is undermining people's support for the royal family, and that damages them. It damages Britain. So
I mean, neither of us know, but can you imagine what's going on in the royal family at the moment?
You can't begin to think how much pain and trauma is happening in that family. Yeah. But of course, the victims suffer trauma. You know, so it's not a question of one or the other. We need this case to resolve itself. And I'm afraid the only way that's going to happen is a court hearing or an admission of liability. I can't see the latter, so it'll be the former.
And let's just talk a little bit about victims at the moment. I think one of the things that is always prevalent, particularly when you're dealing with a high-profile case that gets into the media, is that the victims' details, their full names, are put into the public domain. And of course, with the world of social media and the internet now, for perpetuity, forever, that information sits online. And these people go on, they have families, they have children, and incredibly difficult for them. And I think we have to take some time to think. The impact on these victims, when it gets into the public domain, is absolutely phenomenal. And they often get forgotten, don't they? We've been talking about Maxwell. We've been talking about the support that she's had. And the victims will have a lot of support behind the scenes by the authorities. But we as a society have to acknowledge it's far more than just giving evidence in court. It's a lifelong impact as a result of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, there's a lifelong impact of the trauma of any allegation that you've suffered abuse, and then of course there's the re-traumatization of a court process, and then there's a re-traumatization of the after effect and the aftermath. And as you say, people, victims and others do get support. It's not as much as they should, and it's not as long as it should. But evidently, you know, we would encourage victims to come forward. It's important at the end of the day, regardless of the length of time since something may have happened, that people are brought to justice. I'm mindful of the fact that when people hear about how terrible a process is to victims, that actually discourages victims from coming forward. I would never want that. I think that, you know, we as authorities need to get our act together to make it easier and better for victims to be able to give their evidence and to ensure a fair trial.
And we've always said many times that actually it's the cases like this, it's the high profile cases that allow people, the members of the public, to believe that anyone is touchable, anybody can be brought to justice. And I think the process that's been going through in relation to the American courts, I think is one that we have to hold up in some kind of, you know, esteem, because this process in time, if this, you know, this hasn't gone anywhere in the UK, So we've got the British authorities who have been told to asked to investigate this. They've investigated it and decided there's insufficient evidence to take the matter further forward. And of course, evidence is on a different scale. It's balance of probability between beyond reasonable doubt. But you've still got a position whereby I'm not aware that, well, he hasn't, in relation to, I mean, has Prince Andrew been formally interviewed under caution?
It appears
in
not.
Relation
no, no.
to Giffrey? So
in 2015, she gave a complaint and she was interviewed by police, 2015. And that's as far as, so you use the word investigation. There's never been an investigation. There's been.
Well, they've ruled it out before they've started. Here is a woman who's made an allegation, a woman who has credibility. She's been shown to have credibility in relation to Epstein. And now, and she reports it to the British authorities, the Metropolitan Police, and the Metropolitan Police have done their scoping exercise and decided that there is no investigation to follow. Well, the very nature is investigations follow as a result of taking an allegation. You ask some questions. Well, how do they know that they can't? Because unless they talked to Prince Andrew, they can't check to see whether or not his information is consistent with what she's saying.
As I said, there was a review, a scoping exercise in 2019, another one in 2021. And they've, as you say, you can't find the evidence unless you investigate for the evidence. The most, you know, I keep the door open. The commissioner of the Metropolitan Police a few months ago said if there was some other major impact, major event, or major bit of evidence, then they would relook at it. Well, Ghislaine Maxwell was convicted.
Yeah.
I think that amounts to a significant change.
But isn't that where we are? We've got to call upon the Metropolitan Police Commissioner to open this as an investigation and investigate Prince Andrew in relation to the allegations that Giffrey
and everybody else. I mean, yes, any other British individuals or people who live in this country who may be implicated in this particular network need to be investigated. And I think there is the current Metropolitan Police view is no longer sustainable.
And how do you go above that? I mean, the problem is we have a tripartite policing system. So it's not as though the Home Secretary can order the Chief Constable to, or the Commissioner in this case, to investigate. But it must be that the Home Secretary and the Commissioner are very friendly. But somebody somewhere needs to pick this up and say, this needs to be investigated, because you cannot. It is absolutely wrong, and I feel very strongly about this, as I know you do, that the actions recently of the Metropolitan Police have been appalling in relation to their scoping exercise, which is ultimately almost entirely rule no evidence to pursue any further.
Absolutely.
Forward.
Well, I mean,
not even to investigate.
As I said, I mean, you can't force the police to investigate something, but the court of public opinion is very strong. And of course, we do have another body called the National Crime Agency, who are the equivalent of our UK version of the FBI, I guess. They could potentially take the ball and run with it, or the commissioner could simply say, right, well, we're going to do it now. And as I said, I think she's a bit of a hostage to her own fortune. She said there was, if there was another major event, that they would relook at it. Well, there has been not only one major event, the conviction of Ghislaine Maxwell, but the other events in New York, which clearly now, I think, leave the Met's position.
And how do we get them to relook at it? I mean, I suppose that's one of the issues. How do we force the Commissioner of Metropolitan Police to relook at this?
We can do no more than keep talking about it the way we are. Parliament, I guess, the Select Committee, the Home Affairs Select Committee, could invite her to come and give evidence about child sexual abuse and put some pressure on in that regard. Parliamentarians could put some pressure on. But at the end of the day, you can't force the police to do it. And I suppose,
and that's right. So there shouldn't be government interference. 100%.
I mean, worst case scenario, Mark, is that we could bring a private prosecution if we felt that we had enough evidence or were able to investigate all the right evidence. Mark and Nazir could begin a private prosecution.
Hey, I tell you what, that we'd get a pretty big public support to that.
I'm sure we would, but I don't think you and I would be able to do anything else for the next 2 or 3 years. So I'm very much hoping the police, with all their resources, will take on this matter. Rather than leave it to individuals like you and I.
Brilliant. Well, listen, another fantastic chat with you, Nazir. I think this is going to rumble on for the rest of this year.
Oh, more than that, I'm pretty sure. But I hope it does, because people need to be brought to justice, regardless of who they are. We are, as we always talk, we operate without fear or favour, and so do, and must do, all the authorities that are meant to protect us.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. Please keep listening to our podcast. Tell your friends and everyone that you talk to how fantastic it is, and get them to subscribe. Next week, we're going to be talking about technology and the impact on technology around crime. But please drop us a line either through Twitter or through our email, through our website, and we will respond to everything. Nazir, as always, look after yourself.
Good to talk to you.
Take care. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Do please tell your true crime friends, and it's important that you subscribe to our channel. If you've got any thoughts or you just simply want to get in touch, you can do so via our Twitter page, Fear or Favour, or go to our website, www.fearorfavour.com. The series is edited by Martin Kays, the music by Dylan Epega. Fear or Favour is an original true crime podcast in association with Audioboom.